number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quicken Loan Studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. Nighttime. This is the right time.
You're on the nighttime now.
It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
All right, so unwritten rules in baseball has caused a huge brawl in the Toronto-Texas series in Arlington on Sunday. Are we okay with unwritten rules? Are we as fans okay with these things that are not part of the game we know? It is a private club and it's a private ordeal, but that's what led to today's brawl, and it may lead to suspensions and fines and all of those other things. Just to get you caught up on what happened in Arlington today, Jose Bautista, who had a bat flip in Game 5 last year in the playoffs against the Rangers, was hit in his final at-bat of the series, not for the weekend, but for the season. The last time he was hit by a fastball from Matt Busch in the chest, not at the head. Simple go after him. And he went to first base. He then ran on a ground ball and slid a little late, slid hard. Rougned Odor, who was covering the play, threw a little low, and the two exchanged words, got into it, and Rougned Odor punched Bautista with a closed right hand. Now, why? Why did this escalate? Why? Because of unwritten rules. Because of a response that Texas felt they needed to do, because the unwritten rule last October was you don't flip the bat and show up the pitcher in that situation, when even if you hit a home run like he did in that Game 5 that clinched the playoff series, that had to be responded to. That the Rangers needed to answer for that. That the Rangers needed to come back and retaliate for that because of an unwritten rule. Not because he broke the rules or he broke an unwritten rule. An unwritten rule you and I aren't a part of as the consuming culture of baseball. Just them. So this was a personal beef. Why we were dissed. We were showed up. So we've got to respond. But this is somebody attacking you just before the bell rings at school. This is somebody attacking you just before the bus comes, but on summer vacation. This is somebody gut punching you just before the teacher walks in the room. The Texas Rangers got to Jose Bautista not in the first meeting of the season, not in the second one. In the last game of the season series, in the last at bat. That's how they responded. Why they were so angry, and they were so dissed, and they were so disrespected that they waited until the last possible second before the teacher walked in the room, before they threw at Bautista to answer for the bat flip. And this led to Bautista getting punched in the face with a closed fist. Because nobody can control themselves when it comes to the unwritten rules and how you respond to them in baseball. Now, in an unwritten rule way, I'm sure that the Rangers feel justified in throwing something at Bautista to let him know that flipping a bat, even if it clinched a playoff series, was not cool. Fine. All right. I've followed baseball enough to live with it in a way. But my God, we had to wait until May 16th in his final at-bat to do it? Because again, a brawl over what? Listen, I've seen baseball brawls. I've seen baseball brawls happen because pitchers and batters are coming to blows over going close, going too inside, going near the head, all of those things. Fine. And sometimes you got to blow off a little steam, fine. But on the surface, how do you explain this to a six-year-old that's at the game? Oh, yeah, this happened in October. This all escalated from something in October. You don't explain it to a six-year-old like that because he doesn't understand all that. You just tell them that they were mad and they got in a fight because that's all you can do. Now, again, I get that every sport has a certain code of conduct. Football has it, basketball has it, hockey has it, they all have it. There's usually a sense of, hey, we don't do it this way. We don't act this way. We don't do this. You don't do this to our guys. We won't do this to your guys. There is this unwritten rule. It's a code. I get it. Remember years ago? Oh, God, I don't even know how long ago it was, but it was years. Remember when Alex Rodriguez was running the base paths and he yelled, I got it? They were playing the Blue Jays, and he yelled, I got it, behind the third baseman who was underneath it for a fly ball. And the third baseman thought somebody else was going to come in and get it, and he didn't know it was Alex Rodriguez behind him, and the ball fell. Remember how people lost their minds? If you go back, people lost their minds because that shouldn't happen. That's an unwritten rule. And Alex Rodriguez was like, well, no, I'm just playing the way I see it. People went, oh, no, you got to respect the code. So this brawl occurred because the Rangers were retaliating to something that Bautista did back in October. And they may have been right to respond. But I do agree with the Blue Jays that said, cowardly, easy way out, and gutless. Do it in the beginning of the series. Do it the first time. And don't do it with a pitcher that wasn't in the series. Give them the pitcher that was in the series that was affected by it. All right, let's go to Chris in Dallas. You're next up on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Hey, what's up, Tony?
What's on your mind?
This is gonna be my last the last time I'm able to call. So,
oh no!
I just want to say thank you for always getting me on, and you're amazing at what you do. And your boy answering the phone is great at what he does, and he's got his own show coming up here at some point. And all the luck to him because he's really good at his job, man.
Well, thank you, very much, man. I'm gonna miss you.
So, all right, two things. One, I love how, even though it is kind of tacky, they did get a pitcher who wasn't involved and only has been up for a couple days. But I do love how they picked the one felon on the field who throws 99 miles an hour to just beat him in the ribs.
Yeah, that is
pretty
true.
That was pretty nice. And secondly, that punch by Odor, sans Kermit Washington and Rudy Tomjanovich, that was the best punch I've ever seen in a non-combat sports fight in my life.
I mean, agree
it
completely.
It was beautiful, wasn't it?
It was. If you're going to judge it based on technical merit, it was a fantastic punch. Got great extension, went right for the chin. Got a lot of muscle behind it.
He got great hip turn.
Oh yes.
I mean, his hips went. He followed through with the shoulders, and then the right hook came. And they put that in slow-mo, and it caught Bautista so clean. I'm surprised he didn't go down out. All right, I do have a question. If he went out, I mean, we've never seen this. I personally have never seen it, of a player getting, you know, it's not unconscious, but getting stunned to the point, you know, like that they're out on the field. What kind of punishment do you think would come from that? Because there's no difference between the punch that he threw right now where Bautista's fine, or if he happened to connect, you know, 2 centimeters to the right and it knocked him out.
You know, I don't know if baseball has a degree of severity punishment for something like that. Like, let's say if you punch a guy with a closed fist, it's 5 games. I don't know if it's more because the guy got hurt or he was injured or he got knocked out. I think it's just 5 games.
Looked terrible.
I don't know. It was a great punch.
Was literally knocked unconscious.
It looked awful.
It looked terrible. I mean, people would be crying for more than 5, even though there's no difference between, you know, the punch that he threw, you know, between this event and if he gets knocked out. But,
yeah,
man, even I would be shocked to see a baseball player get, you know, knocked out by a punch.
It would be, though, baseball would then have to come out and say, look, we don't want to get into the business of grading everything, even though they may, but we like to say that these are kind of standard across the board, and that a punch that knocks out somebody, while it's worse than somebody that gets punched without it, we don't want to start getting into judging what you know, this guy gets 15 and the next one gets 10 and the next punch is only 5 because the guy was, you know, was walking. I think the picture of Odor with the, when he's, there's a picture of Odor fully extended with a fist, and Bautista's kind of got his helmet kind of disheveled and his sunglasses are on top of his head and he's kind of backing away. This becomes the new Robin Ventura, Nolan Ryan picture. Somebody's got to get both of these guys to sign it. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Hey, thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, 800-777-2907. We were just talking about the Jose Bautista Rougned Odor fight. And again, I'm not a happy guy with it, but if you're going to do it, man, Rougned Odor did throw a perfect punch. That was as good of a punch as I've ever seen in a fight.
One thing I will say is comparing it to the Michael Barrett, AJ Pierzynski punch. Remember that one where...
Yes, I remember that one, yeah.
Michael Barrett got 10 games for that punch.
10 games? All right, this has got to be...
But that was also a different commissioner at the time, so...
Yeah, does Rob Manfred got... He's got to go hard on this.
I think he does, too.
He has to go hard on this.
I think...
Because you can't... Listen, the reason that you have to do that is because, in the end, it's about who has control. It is who has control. Is it going to be the governing body of the sport, or is it going to be players policing themselves? You can't have players policing themselves. You can't. Unwritten rules or no unwritten rules or anything like that. You have to say, you can even say you understand some of this stuff. You can even say it's okay when some of this stuff gets out of hand, but in the end, we still have to punish a bit. But you cannot have a player close fist punch a guy for any reason whatsoever. It's about losing control, and baseball is not going to let players govern themselves like this at all. So, yeah, he's got to come down hard on Odor for this. And, you know, listen, you can still have the retaliatory part of this sport, but the moment it gets into punching, that's when we have to say, nope, that's enough. That's enough. We let you guys go at it a little bit. We don't mind a little, all right, I hit your guy, you hit our guy. We'll let some of that go. We'll give guys a warning. But the moment you start getting into actual fist enclosed punches, we're trying to sell tickets here, man. We're trying to grow the game, man. We don't want moms and dads not taking their five-year-olds because we're going to let this happen every single night. No. Right.
This isn't what Bryce Harper was saying when he said make baseball fun again. He was saying, you know, if a bat flip happens, let it go. But we don't
let it
need,
go.
Yeah, we don't need to be hitting each other and then to get on base and then a hard slide that was illegal under the new rule and then a closed fist punch. Like, that's not what making baseball
that's not
fun
what
again.
This is.
Just having fun out there, playing the game. Yeah, maybe a bat flip happens. It's not a big deal. But get over it. Don't be such whiny babies. That's what I feel like baseball players are when they do this kind of crap.
All the time. And that's the one thing that Bryce Harper, I believe in. Because look, I'm just a fan. I'm not part of the club. I couldn't care less about your stupid unwritten rules. And for you to think that I care about them is ridiculous. I couldn't care less that you're like, hey, I can't take a bat flip. I got to throw it to guys. I got to hit a guy for that. No, it's your problem. That's not my problem.
Like, remember,
I buy a ticket to my family. I'm taking my kid to the game. You want to throw baseballs at each other over some slight 6 months ago? Get over it. Get a psychiatrist couch and sit down and talk it out.
Who was the pitcher that got really mad, furious over somebody running over the mound?
Oh, I remember that.
Gosh,
I wish I could remember the name, but I remember that incident too.
Like,
there's all
nuts.
There's all kinds of things like this that baseball needs to get over itself on. And again, it's a hard sell. That's my point. It's a hard sell because, again, If you're Rob Manfred and you're trying and you know the numbers are going down from youth in the generation, and you want to get the game exciting and fun, this is the kind of stuff you spot. Not the fighting. People are like, oh, they'll talk about the fight forever. I'm talking about the people losing their mind because they crossed a mound running in, or the people losing their mind because of a bat flip, or the people losing their mind because of whatever little tiny slight that they have. This makes the sport look petty. This makes the sport look like it's being played by a bunch of thin-skinned children. And there's a generation that is growing up that just doesn't want to be a part of that. That says, look, we want to do things our own way. We don't want to follow the 500 different rules that are not in the book. We want to know why you're throwing at a guy's head, and we find out later it's because of something 6 months ago. For the love of Pete, what are we doing here? And I think that is where, if you're Rob Manfred, you have to say, look, we have got to nip this stuff in the bud.
I compare it to, in the NBA, the MLB players, the way they act when it comes to the unwritten rules, they act like babies. I compare it to the NBA, how every single player, every single play, whines about every single call. And it's not like they're arguing with umpires like a manager does or a player does after a terrible called third strike. No, they're actually whining to these referees every single play. Goran Dragic today clearly hit somebody, I think it was Lowry, on the arm on a three-pointer. Clear as day. The video showed it. He hit his arm. He complained for 5 minutes about it while they were going up and down the floor. He was still yelling at the referee. And that's the kind of stuff in these sports that I don't want my kids to grow up seeing, because I don't want them to be out on the court yelling at referees over a stupid call that, yeah, they probably did commit the foul or whatever it is.
I just, to see this occur and to see it, the whole story tree of what we saw on the field is broken down from, as I said earlier tonight, I think the Rangers were very cowardly in responding the way they did. I think it's extremely cowardly to wait to the last at-bat in a season series to get back. If this angered you so much, then take care of it right away and get it over with. Because part of the thing that I can accept with unwritten rules, one of the things that I can accept in that sort of retaliation culture that baseball has, you diss us, we're going to retaliate, and is that at the end, everyone is supposed to call it a day. That there's some sort of acceptance. If I hit a home run and I flip my bat, you may plunk the next guy, but then it's supposed to be over. Because we're all on the same page. Meaning, we can't do this all night where I plunk your guy, you plunk our guy, that everybody has an understanding of mutually assured destruction. We just can't let our game get to a point where the whole game is about getting back for slights and then retaliation for slights on top of retaliation for slights. So if your guy throws a bat and I hit him, that's it. It's over. We move on. And that's something I can at least respect from the baseball people. But when the Rangers say, no, we're going to wait till his last at-bat in a series where we're not going to see them again all year, that I think is garbage. I think it's garbage, and it is cowardly. Because now you can't sell it to me. Because now you can't sell it to me as one of those unwritten rule things you don't understand. Because I do understand this. This is trying to get the last thing on Jose Bautista, because you know that when you do that, they would want to retaliate, or he would want to retaliate, and he won't be able to because we don't play them again for the rest of the year. Silly. Absolutely silly. And again, if you're Rob Manfred, this is the kind of stuff that you come down on and say, look, first of all, I cannot have a player punch another player with a closed fist, because these guys have serious contracts. And let's say he broke Juan Bautista's jaw. Let's say Juan Bautista, like Chris had said, got knocked out. Let's say he was seriously hurt and out 6 weeks. Somebody is paying him a lot of money to play baseball in Toronto, and Rougned Odor is not going to be responsible for him being out 6 weeks over some sort of fracas at second base over something that happened in October. That's ridiculous. Golden State and Oklahoma City could be a better series than a lot of people think. How big could it be? Ray Woodson from KNBR is going to join us next from San Francisco. We'll talk about it from the Warriors side of things next. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Tony D here on Yahoo Sports Radio as we continue through the night tonight talking about the NBA playoffs. And in the Western Conference Finals, we'll have Game 1 on Monday between Golden State and Oklahoma City. And joining us right now, Ray Woodson from KNBR does Warriors postgame. Talk about this matchup and what we can expect. How are you, Ray?
I'm doing good, Tony. How are you?
Good. Thank you for your time tonight. All right, so these teams met three times during the regular season. The Warriors won all three by an average of about eight points. Is there anything about that series during the regular season that we can take into these playoffs? Is there something that the Warriors do so much better that the Oklahoma City Thunder could won't be able to figure it out in the playoffs?
I think that what you got from those games is that Oklahoma City is going to be very, very competitive with the Warriors. They probably felt like they should have won that game in Oklahoma City with that epic ending and the Steph Curry half-court shot that ends up winning it. They turned the ball over at the end of regulation. And then the game before the Super Bowl, the night before the Super Bowl, also very competitive. It was tied with about 4 or 5 minutes to go. The Warriors have their hands full, obviously, with two guys who can take over the game, and Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant. So they're very aware of that. I think that also they look at those games, but they also look at how Oklahoma City has been playing up late, and, you know, how they were able to close out a very good Spurs team. And they understand, they fully understand that this is a team that's clicking right now, maybe even a little bit better than when they faced them during the regular season.
All right, defensively, who will get the assignments of trying to control Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant?
Well, I think you're going to see multiple defenders run at these guys, and this is where a guy like Andre Iguodala coming off the bench is so important to the Warriors. He can take on a bigger player, or he can defend a smaller player as well. So you're going to see a lot of Clay probably on Westbrook. You'll see a little bit of Iguodala as well, maybe Sean Livingston. Livingston also can guard Durant, and then you can run Draymond Green and Durant as well. So what I think you're going to see is multiple guys running at both these players. They've had, you know, some success with Westbrook, but Durant's been the guy that's torched them on a consistent basis. And I think they kind of realize he's going to do that. They're going to try their best. You know, he's going to get his 30 or 35. It's just a matter of how many shots. And with Westbrook, you know, I think that they would live with him taking more outside shots. They know he likes to slash through the hoop. And that's why I think they hope that Andrew Bogut is able to play tomorrow for rim protection when Westbrook goes to the hoop. But, you know, they understand both these guys. They can go off at any time.
Having seen this team for 73 wins, is there any weakness at all that hasn't been answered during the season for Golden State?
Well, I think that their bench play can be spotty at times. Still pretty deep, and I think it served them well going into this postseason. But there'll be some dead spots when they go to the bench. Other times they play very well. So you get a little inconsistency there. It's where, you know, you're asking where the bucket's coming from. Sometimes most Bates you can tell right away. I mean, he'll fire away within 15 seconds of checking into the game. And if he hits his first shot, well, you're probably going to get something from him. And, you know, in game four against Portland, he was huge, you know, with his three-pointers, hit three of them. But, you know, who else are you going to get the buckets from? Will Livingston down on the low block if he's up against a smaller player? But it's not consistent. Barbosa sometimes can provide some energy. The other thing is rebounding, and it's not that they're a bad team rebounding. They're average. But against Oklahoma City, they've had their struggles. That game in Oklahoma City that Steph won, I think the rebounding deficit was 30. And we know Oklahoma City's very good on the glass. They've out-rebounded their opponents by nearly 10 a game, which is remarkable. So that's an area the Warriors have to be worried about, is hitting the offensive boards.
When you saw the Thunder in the playoffs against the Spurs, did you watch and say, boy, they look a little different, or things are coming together a little bit better for them than maybe we saw during the regular season?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things you saw is they were able to pull out those games, close games in the fourth quarter, which was, you know, a nemesis for them during the regular season. How many games did they lose late? And we saw it when they played the Warriors. They didn't handle those situations well. They did a better job against San Antonio. Also, you know, it's interesting now they're running more of that Twin Towers lineup out there with Stephen Adams and Enes Kanter. And that's going to be a problem for the Warriors. And again, why you hope Bogut is ready for the series. And so that was part of it as well. And I think defensively they're a little more locked in than they were during the regular season. And they've got good defenders. Obviously, Ibaka, Adams has improved greatly. That's one guy I look at and say he stepped up his game. And, of course, Andre Robertson is a good defender.
You mentioned Andrew Bogut. If he doesn't play, what is his factor in this series?
I think that they can get by without him for a couple of games, but I think that that will certainly provide more impetus for Oklahoma City to run that bigger lineup out there. Now, the Warriors may still run out the so-called death lineup, the small lineup, even if Oklahoma City goes big. It's going to be a premium on everybody hitting the boards if that's the case on missed shots. And if they're able to get a good percentage of rebounds, they can outrun that lineup. But, I think that Bogut could very well be a factor. They're going to need that rim protection. They're going to need the foul, you know. And Varejao is good for 7 or 8 minutes, but he can be a little reckless defensively. He can give you good energy as well. But I'd rather have Bogut's minutes than Varejao's minutes, obviously. So if they don't play with him for game one, which is a possibility, he's listed as questionable right now. I think he will be there for game two. It sounds like that's a decent possibility. But you wouldn't want to go without him any longer than that, I don't think, in this series.
Yeah, we are talking about the league MVP and Steph Curry, and he's very hard to defend. When Russell Westbrook has defended him, how good is that matchup for him?
That can be problematic for Steph from time to time. I mean, Westbrook is, I'm anticipating he's going to try to get very physical with him. That's kind of the book with Steph. It always has been. Yeah, it doesn't mean that you're going to contain him all the time, but that's the best shot you give. And so that's going to be a very interesting contrast. The difference is, I think that Curry won't have as much time on the floor against Westbrook defensively. That way he won't need to expend so much energy on the defensive end, keep his legs fresh, which obviously is critical since he's coming back from the sprained knee. But it's going to be a fantastic matchup. Here you've got five of the top players in the league. I mean, it's a basketball buffet. And, you know, folks have got their knives and forks and their napkins out and they're ready to eat.
As far as Curry's injury, we saw him score the 40 points coming off the bench, and he played in the Game 5 finale of the series. But, Ray, let me ask you a question. Is he playing near 100%, or do you notice that he's still bothered by it but playing through it?
I think he's playing through it, and he said he's sore, but it has not cut down his effectiveness appreciably. I mean, nobody's really 100% at this time of year, you know.
Yeah.
You just try to get as close as you can get. But he's good enough, and then 85 to 90% is good enough right now. The thing I took particular note of when he came back is being able to cut, being able to stop and start, being able to move side to side, and he was able to do enough of that, obviously. And that overtime performance at Portland was unbelievable, and he wasn't showing any fear going to the hoop either. So you're getting pretty much the full Steph Curry experience coming up, and this rest time is certainly going to help. And, oh, by the way, the ankle looks fine now.
Ray Woodson joins us, KNBR. He covers the Golden State Warriors, does their postgame show here on Yahoo Sports Radio's regarding for the Warriors and Thunder series. Ray, I guess the Warriors can play if you want to throw a whole bunch of points on the board. They can win if you want to bog it down. Is there any scenario in which the Oklahoma City's game plan should be, if we play like this, we have a better chance of winning the series?
Well, I think if you're Oklahoma City, you just keep on doing what you were doing against San Antonio, you know, noticing and understanding you're going up against a different style team. But, you know, if the Warriors play the way they're capable of playing, they beat everybody. I think we all know that. So you have to do some things to sidetrack them a little bit. And, you know, that may be a wrinkle we haven't thought of that Billy Donovan has in mind for Steph Curry in terms of running multiple defenders at him. And, you know, but that's the whack-a-mole game against the Warriors. If Steph is starting slow, like he was in Game 5, well, here comes Klay Thompson to make 13 of 17 shots. And, you know, again, Portland is probably not as stout defensively as Oklahoma City is. But, hey, Oklahoma City's got a reason to feel good going into this series after what they did against San Antonio.
Ray Woodson again, KNBR, covers the Golden State Warriors. Really appreciate your time and insight into the series, my friend. Thank you.
You bet, Tony.
All right, coming up next, do the Knicks have their guy in mind for their new head coach? And we'll also break down the Warriors and the Thunder. Would you really be surprised if the Thunder were to win this series? Could it actually go 7? We'll talk about that next. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and YahooSportsRadio.com.
All right, thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio. Thanks, Bob, for the picture of the punch of Rougned Odor and Jose Bautista with a little Batman pow to it. I like it. I think this is going to be one of those keepsakes. Get them printed. See in 15 years if there could ever be a moment like at a card show where you could get both of these guys to sign it. You know, kind of like Nolan Ryan and Robin Ventura. That was a cool moment. I don't know. This could be iconic. It's a great photo. God, it's a good punch. I don't prove the punch, that's for sure. But if you're going to do it, this is how you do it, right? It's like when your kid, you know, he's like, oh, Dad, I need to learn how to fight. I'm just this kid at school. And you're like, no, we don't want you to fight. But if you're going to get in the fight, let me show you how you should punch. That's the way I look at Rougned Odor. It's like, I know I'm going down for this. I'm getting suspended for this. I don't care. Pow. Good for him. But I still don't condone this whole unwritten rule garbage that led to this. Silly. Stop being so thin-skinned, baseball. Grow some. For crying out loud. Let some things roll off the back every now and then. Getting tired of it. And plus, with the series being so spread out, I love when we have a series where it gets a little physical, like on a Sunday, and they're like, well, these teams will meet again on April 28th, on August 28th. Then we'll see. You know, it's like, wait a minute, really? We're going to wait a couple of months for them to regroup and come back together and then go back out it again? Who was the two teams last year that fought all the time? Was it the Royals and the A's? Remember when they fought all the time too? Royals were getting involved in everything, but I remember the Royals and the A's were duking it out. After a while, I can't even keep up with all the people. So, good punch. Don't like how it went down, but good punch. 800-777-2907. All right, so Phil Jackson is looking for a head coach for the Knicks. He may already have his man in Kurt Rambis, but the interesting hire, and I think the right man for the job, is former Indiana Pacer head coach Frank Vogel. Jackson met with Frank Vogel. I think this would be a great hire for the Knicks. I hope he does hire him for the Knicks. This is not against anything Kurt Rambis is doing. I think Vogel is better at getting the best out of his team. And right now, if you're Phil Jackson, you need to get this right. Jackson got this job on a lot of goodwill. Jackson rolled in on a white horse, much like a lot of big name executives do when they go into a new situation where their job is to sort of clean it up and write things. Jackson was given a long, long, long piece of rope because A, he's got multiple championships. B, he was a former Knick. And C, he believes in a system that at least the Knicks are willing to go with, which is the triangle. You may argue all you want that Phil Jackson won all those championships with some of the best players, but coaches win championships with the best players. That's not a new concept. Red Auerbach won championships with the best players. Right? Pat Riley, same deal. They all win because they have the best players. Jackson is a former Knick. He is a guy that believes in a system. He has led championship teams. That's why he was hired, but he does have to produce here. Hiring Derek Fisher was a mistake. He later found that out. Your second hire has to be good. Your first hire, you can get away with it. Again, people are living off the, hey, Phil Jackson, we are lucky to have him here. Phil Jackson running our team, we are blessed because in a year or so, we're going to be able to turn this around. But you have to be able to turn this into something with your second go-around as the hire for your head coach. Frank Vogel is that man. Now, people will say, yeah, but Frank Vogel is not familiar with the triangle as much as Kurt Rambis is. Aha! But Frank Vogel did work with Phil Jackson with the Lakers and is astute as to what the triangle actually is. Jackson's committed to this. That ain't going anywhere. He's absolutely going to stick with it. But Frank Vogel knows it. And so I think the New York Knicks are in a position to make the hire. Now, Nate McMillan got hired by the Pacers. Now, let that sink in for a little bit. Nate McMillan, who may turn out to be a really good coach, is the guy that was in line to replace the guy who was let go after getting the most out of the Pacers than anybody could possibly have gotten out of that team. And could be the next head coach for Phil Jackson. I don't want to say Knicks because the Knicks are really not the hire. This is Phil Jackson's hire more than it is the Knicks hire, if you know what I mean. Right? I mean, it doesn't feel like the Knicks are going to go out and get Frank Vogel. It feels always as if it's Phil Jackson that's going to get Frank Vogel. And that is the key, because the Knicks and Phil Jackson really, while they're one, they're not really the same things. The Knicks are a dysfunctional mess. Phil Jackson is supposed to be that steady, calm ship. I don't know if it's very calm these days, but it's a steady, calm ship. I like Frank Vogel. I thought Larry Bird made a huge mistake letting him go. I thought it was really ridiculous. The whole idea of, oh, well, players have to hear a new voice. Oh, players need to... Yes, yuck. Greg Popovich, Pat Riley, the guys I mentioned before who had long stints as head coaches in at locations, were successful, didn't necessarily need to hear and have another voice brought in just because. And that's what I felt like Indiana did there, just because. I'm sticking to a philosophy, and that's what I'm doing, even if it costs me a really smart guy. If I'm Phil Jackson, this is the guy I want. This is the guy I need. 800-777-2907. Thanks for joining us. Again, Twitter, at Tony D Radio. And if you haven't liked us on Facebook, do so. Tony D Radio Show. You can comment there. You can ask questions. You can make observations. It's all wide open. Coming up next, we're getting a little sick of Greg Popovich. I know I am. Plus, Adam's News of the Night and Baseball Roundup. It's all in Hour 3. Next, Yahoo Sports Radio.